Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 179 for November 25th, 2013. I'm Jamie Pauls.
I'm Ricky Enger.
Great men are forged in fire. It is the privilege of lesser men to light the flame. Hey, I'm going to Doctor Who tonight. Yes!
All right.
50th anniversary. Sorry. Oh, Joe Steinkamp, by the way.
Good. Yeah, we probably should.
Sorry, I'm just way too excited. I'm actually going to go to the theater and see something that everybody saw at one time in something like 97 countries on Saturday. That was just crazy. And it wasn't a sporting event. Holy crap. Wow.
I know. Isn't that amazing? And you know, it's funny. The world's consciousness was so focused on Doctor Who. And it wasn't just the US. I mean, it was the world because everybody's tuning in all at once. And you see all this stuff on Twitter and so on. But there's almost kind of like, you know, there's a different feeling when it's a holiday. Everybody's focused on one thing. It was like that for Doctor Who with me. And finally, I decided that I would actually start to dive into said show.
Yippee!
Yes!
Two wins in one day. First Daleks on the big screen, and now the rock star joins us in the Whovian cult. And for those of you who follow me on Twitter, haters gotta hate, I get you, but not touching it, man. Just not touching it. It was so cool. But you know, there are all sorts of things that are out there that everybody gets to share. And sometimes there's sharing for free, and sharing for free is a good thing. As in the case of NVDA has a new update.
Yay, Release Candidate 3. And if you've checked out their podcast lately, they're working on some Word document stuff. You can read protected documents. They're kind of talking about Open Office just a little bit. Not a whole lot yet, but they're kind of
playing around. Open Office is actually doing some things with accessibility. So they're kind of building in some accessibility standards, or utilizing them rather. And that's exciting stuff for sure.
Too many doggone options. You've got iWork and you've got this, and you've got Microsoft that, and now Open Office. Oh my God, lots of all sorts of options, except in the case of media players. Everybody, some sad news over the weekend. We heard something about a certain animal.
You know, the llama is safe once again.
Mike is safe, I heard. Yeah, that's true. But I don't think he'll be whipping any llama ass anytime soon, or at least not at right now. Seems that AOL, who bought Winamp and Nullsoft back in 1999, from the original release in 1996, 15 million downloads in 1996, if you can believe that, of the Winamp player from a Mr. Frankel. It seems that Winamp is being shuttered in December by AOL, although there may be a white knight of all there places. Might. Who would have thought?
Microsoft? Seriously?
Who would have thought? Yeah. But the writer of Winamp actually went on to do something really crazy. Maybe you'll remember this, Jamie. It was an app for file sharing called Nutella.
Oh, yeah?
Really?
Wow. Yeah, he did Reaper. This podcast is brought to you by Reaper. Thank you.
No kidding. Well, that's kind of
this history
cool.
lesson brought to you by Serotalk.
Yes. Yeah.
But this is true. I mean, it's hard to think that back in 1996, that just one little program would affect so many and really touch so many in so many ways, just like we were talking about with Doctor Who a little earlier. And Brian Brushwood on Twit just mentioned that he had gotten a plugin for Winamp years and years ago, and it is still powering his magic shows that he does today.
That's cool.
That is neat. And I mean, what does it mean that Winamp is, quote, going away? I think they say that you're not going to be able to download it from the Winamp site.
Right. December 20th is when it's.
Yeah. But there are going to be executables running around out there where you could still download it. And it's not like you would launch the program and it just simply doesn't work anymore. It's just not going to be actively developed.
Well, unless you're using Shoutcast, because Shoutcast does actually go away at the same time that WinAmp does.
Yeah, it does.
And a lot of radio stations use Shoutcast, internet radio stations, to broadcast. So
I want to start learning Icecast right now.
Yeah.
Unless there's some active adware or calls back to the server, and I'm sure somebody will go through the registry and start ripping those out. Mm-hmm. But some plugins and some abilities to get plugins will go away also. So it's not a complete thing that if you're running something from, say, oldversions.com, that you still could run it without any issues. And also, in something like this, cross your fingers, nobody then turns it into a zero-day attack. Because if nobody's maintaining it, then somebody might exploit it, and that could be bad. So there is some dangers of staying on an older version of anything.
So there are alternatives if one wishes to explore them, which I am playing with Foobar, F-O-O-B-A-R, 2000. And I know our own Mr. Purdue has used Foobar for a long time. It's one of those programs that there's a lot of configurability, a lot. And so a person probably needs to get it really configured the way they want it, which I have not done yet, by the way. But I am playing around.
Lots of exploration ahead for you, I suppose. Yes. And I mean, you can certainly play all the music from your media library, but sometimes what you want is just to have something streaming and you say, hey, I want things that sound like this artist, or give me something from this genre. Spotify is a great way to do that, but not necessarily accessible. It can be usable with some workarounds. There's an iOS app, and now on Windows, there is a new app called Blind Spot that's going to allow you to use Spotify. You do have to be a paid subscriber to use this, and it's because Spotify doesn't open their API to developers except for those people who are paid subscribers. So at this point, if you're just looking to check out Spotify for free, yeah, not so much. But Blind Spot is available if you're a paid subscriber, so check that out.
You know, I mentioned earlier about going to the movie theater and being able to sit in a theater and hearing something that on the big screen that I've already watched at home. You know, I could do that with Describe Video as well, but soon, faithful listener, there's a possibility that you'll be able to listen to a Described video off your device without having to go through the hoops of being able to get a device from the movie theater and sitting in a certain theater at a certain time during a certain showing. Yep, Movie Reading, an app that is now available on the iOS App Store, is out and about, and you can go get it now. And in fact, if you want to know more about this app, we actually interview Solo DX at the end of this podcast, and you'll be able to hear a lot more about what's coming for Movie Reading and Solo DX.
I can't wait for this interview because I have so many questions about this app and how it works and limitations and earbuds versus microphone built in versus...
Oh, yeah. We get into the technology of what it is that powers it, the delivery system, some ideas about the files and where they go and what they do, other platforms. Really great conversation with Mr. Justin Soul, and we talk a little bit about that. And, of course, if you want to learn more about this app and, of course, the company that is behind it, check our show notes, serotalk.com.
You know, one of the things that movie moguls do is to check the numbers. You know, how's this movie doing? From last month to this month, from last year to this year, whatever. And I suppose Excel is probably one of the most popular ways to track these sorts of things.
Not with me, but yes.
Well, yeah, you count me out. But
I forgot to take into account that I suck at math.
So many people hate Excel.
Yeah.
Excel is just vilified for no particular reason. And I think it's because maybe some people don't understand how to use it to its fullest potential. But Kathy Ann Murtha and ATI have an answer for those of you who are trying to dive into the loveliness that is Excel. At least if you're using this with JAWS for Windows, you can check out this textbook. and it's for JAWS 14 and 15, since there have been no changes in terms of how Excel works between those two versions.
Well, you know, numbers aren't the only way to get information about your product and how it's doing. Sometimes surveys are a good way to find out what people think, and Bookshare decided to go that route, and they would like for you to take a survey. And in fact, if you do this, I believe there's a possibility of an Amazon gift card in it for you, right?
Yeah, $100 actually. So you're entered into a drawing, and this is a pretty short survey. Looks like it's going to only take about 5 minutes. So well worth it to go let the folks at Bookshare know what you think about their services and maybe get a little something out of it too, aside from the improvements that they're likely to make based on the info they get from this survey.
There's a new app out on the iOS App Store called Do It Right, W-R-I-T-E. It is a way to kind of teach handwriting. You know, if you use iOS 7, you can use a handwriting feature with VoiceOver. And this app states that if you learn the techniques, these are very simplified techniques, and so it's not going to guarantee you really attractive handwriting on paper, but it does a really good job of teaching letters and explaining how to draw letters and numbers. And then there's a game that I haven't even gotten to yet. I've just been playing with a tutorial a little bit that will let you numbers cascade from the top of the screen, and you get to make those numbers and play this fun little or letters and numbers and play this fun little game. So Do It Right is something worth checking out. And I suspect we may talk about it more on Triple Click Home, not this upcoming episode, but perhaps a future episode.
Again with the numbers. I mean, it's almost like the F word or the S word. Oh, man. You know, blind educator, a good friend of ours, Louise, actually has a kind of demo of this particular app. And we have a link to it in the show notes as well. And he's actually a good guy to follow on Twitter if you don't already follow him already. He won the race to Android.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, I'll give you props, bud. All right.
He was the first to get KitKat.
Yeah, before the rest of us, and on a Nexus 2012 or 2012, no less. So,
Actually, impressive. He got it on the 2013 first. I think he's got both models, and so his 2013 model got it first, and then he got it a little later on the 2012.
It's that kind of dedication that Google rewards. I'm just
yes.
I'm just an Android old phone and an old Nexus. He's two new tablets.
Yeah,
I can't win. It's like trying to win like-for-like battles on Solara. I just can't win.
You got that right. But so many people were wondering, actually. We got a couple of comments on Twitter as far as wondering who got it first between you and me. And turns out that we got it simultaneously, and Lisa got it before either of us.
Lisa, on her birthday, gets a gift from Google.
It was her birthday, so, you know, a gift from Google.
The gift of accessibility from Google to Lisa Salinger. That was, I don't know if she saw it that way, but we did. We thought it was very funny.
Absolutely.
Coming up after the break, we're going to find out what Jamie has lost. Ricky will keep nudging him in his arm for making phone calls on a plane. And then we'll discuss the sound of silence versus the sound of buggy, buggy, buggy things. All that and more on Sarah Talk 179 after the break.
I'm sorry, preacher. I must have time
today. Hi, I'm Jamie Pauls.
Oh, hey, Jamie, what can I do for you?
Looking for a cross-platform solution to quickly convert printed materials and PDFs into text, MP3, or DAISY formats?
Oh, yeah, actually I am. I mean, wait, you're not going to try to sell me something, are you?
Check out Cerotech's DocuScan Plus. For just $299, use DocuScan Plus on your Windows or Mac computer. Store documents in the cloud for easy retrieval and access them from anywhere. For more information, visit www.docuscanplus.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to Cerotalk 179, and tis the season for people to start lining up outside doors and looking at windows going open, 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 open. But also, some might think it is the time to get together with friends and family and warm up next to a cozy, cozy fire.
Ooh, like maybe a Kindle fire?
Ooh,
yeah.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, it sounds like fun to me. Actually sounds like fun to Buddy Brandon. He got one.
Yeah. You could read by the Kindle Fire, couldn't you?
You could definitely read by the Kindle Fire
for
sure.
That warm. I don't think Buddy talked about if it had any heat coming out of it.
That's true. Not, I wonder if it does get warm at all. That'd be kind of a bad sign if it did. But
is your fire warm? Okay.
Or is it cold fire?
Ooh, nice.
Yes.
Another Rush song. There we go.
Exactly. So the Kindle Fire, cold or not, did recently get an update. So we're at Fire OS 3.0, and they brought some kind of cool things to it. You now have Goodreads integration. Really like Goodreads. It's a great way to keep track of what you have read, and you can rate and review things. And yes, Amazon does. And you can get recommendations from friends as well. And now you got a convenient way to, oh, look, they just recommended this book. I think I'll go buy it. They've also done something interesting where you can have a second screen experience in some instances. If you have one of these Samsung smart TVs, or there's one other way that you can watch the second screen stuff. It's kind of like Chromecast, but not nearly as universal. So as you're watching TV and such, you'll be able to have information about what you're watching on your Fire, assuming that whatever TV you have supports this.
Interesting how Kindle, which is heavily modded from Android, partnered up with Samsung, who likes to heavily mod. No, wait, I'm not going to float that out there. That's terrible. That's a terrible thing to say. That would be like
terrible thing to say.
It'd be like saying Microsoft is a devices and services company. Whatever the heck that means. Yeah, so there's this article here which kind of speculates on what Microsoft kind of sees itself in future as its services and devices go forward. Thinking, of course, we're coming off the launch of the Xbox One, which is in fierce pitch battle with the PlayStation 4. Both have already sold a million units. Of course, there are some fanboys out there that note that Microsoft took several countries to hit 1 million, while the PlayStation only took two to sell a million on the first day. It doesn't matter. Really, at the end of the day, who wants to be a early adopter on these devices? Because both have also reported some issues. In some cases, PlayStation 4s are bricking, and Microsoft is supposedly having disk drives that make noises, or hard drives that also brick. So that's always, you know, I've never told this story. I should tell it on EOL, but I'll tell it real quick. I got a Sega CD years and years and years ago, back in the 90s, and it was DOA on arrival, because back then, and maybe you might remember this, CD trays had a locking mechanism. You actually had to undo a torque wrench.
Yeah.
To get the CDs to move with the tray. They were locked in place and the camera assembly was locked. Well, the original Sega CD didn't have those, so mine was kind of jarred on alignment, and so I actually called Sega, and they actually modified the Sega CD after so many people had reported this. And the funny thing was is that they UPS'd me one, like, really quick, like, the next day, and the guy comes to my door and goes, I got your package, and dumps it on the ground, and I'm like, oh, thank you, that's really great. But the funniest part about this story, and the reason why I tell it, is that for my trouble, I got in the mail a big envelope from Sega, and I was like, oh, well, this is really cool. I wasn't expecting this. And it was like, we're sorry for your trouble. We appreciate you being early adopter. We wanted to repay you with just a small gift. So there was this game called Make Your Own Music Video, and it allowed you to badly clip in badly filmed MPG, MPEG-1 kind of video clips and put filters and stuff on them. And that wasn't so bad, but the fact that it was Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch, Make Your Own Music Video, did feel very much like Sega was shooting me a finger. And sometimes it's really not really good to be a early adopter, because even when somebody thanks you, you might not like what they give you. But Microsoft is actually looking at how things are changing with the purchase of Nokia, which was approved last week by the board of Nokia. So they're getting the hardware division, be that the tablets and the phones and all of that, not necessarily the whole company. And Microsoft is moving forward, like Google has with Motorola, in having a hardware division and then having software and services work behind it. In fact, one of the Microsoft evangelists said that he sees a day when there isn't three versions of Windows running at one concurrent time. What do we think? So far, we've seen bits and pieces. We've talked about Balmer. Do you guys believe that Microsoft is moving with the One Microsoft initiative, as Mary Jo Foley has talked about, that we're seeing some type of cohesiveness? You know, I've speculated that I'm worried it's Windows Phone is the future, but what do we think so far from this article and others?
Well, it seems like it doesn't matter as much what operating system you use anymore. It is about the software, so that these companies are producing.
Yeah, I feel like Microsoft, with things like Skype, and you're seeing Skype all over the place, of course, like the Xbox One, which is also Microsoft, but you can see it on other platforms and so on too. So I feel like they're doing some things to keep themselves relevant, where it's not so much about Windows now, it's more about there are going to be all these different types of hardware that you have. And I feel like what Microsoft wants to do is give you a solid and consistent experience on all of these things. You know, be using Microsoft services, use Azure or whatever. I don't think that's really taken off so much. SkyDrive, yes.
Yeah.
Use all that stuff to store your data and use Skype to communicate with people. And all of it is Microsoft stuff.
Maybe Shoutcast. Maybe Shoutcast will be a part of that to go with Xbox Music. And, you know, then they would have a Twitch or Justin TV kind of service going in the background there. I mean, that acquisition seems less and less crazy the more we kind of look at it, right? And we kind of have an idea that Microsoft is still dominant in the enterprise. There was an article that comes out right before our show recorded that 25% of the people at Yahoo were able to switch over to Yahoo Mail, but the rest were all clinging to Outlook.
I love that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Microsoft has always been great in enterprise. And we, at least I, have tended to think of Microsoft as, you know, this is a big behemoth company that can't really make changes quickly and can't keep up with things. In enterprise, that's sort of a good thing because you want to remain stable. And when IT professionals think about upgrading, it's always a little bit problematic. They don't want to be on the bleeding edge. And so that kind of serves Microsoft well there. But I also feel like Microsoft is taking steps in the right direction as far as being a company that can be taken seriously. You know, they are still doing some interesting things, and I don't think we've seen the last of what Microsoft's going to do.
Somebody on Twitter, I think it was Yadiel, said to me about he perceived Microsoft to be kind of this stodgy thing, like you were saying earlier. And nothing could be firmly from to the other side of that. Remember the ribbon? You know,
yeah.
The tile interface has existed since Windows Media 2005, Windows Media Center. Microsoft has been playing towards this for a very long time, and Xbox is certainly a relevant brand. Skype is a relevant brand. You might not think of Office 365 as being popular, but it is a success. Microsoft has said that too and released those numbers. Surface 2 is getting some amazing reviews. And so I think what happens is the halo effect of Apple and other companies, Google too, kind of jump out ahead. And you just think of Microsoft as this IBM-ish stalwart. And people just have this kind of categorization. And it extends over to if you're going to use Office on the Mac. So Office 365 and the web views is kind of the way that Microsoft looks at that now. And says, you know, we don't have an inkling to do anything more than Office 2011 on the Mac because A, the install base is too small for us, but B, we think we can provide something more dynamic through Office 365. Then here comes Apple to come after Google and Microsoft with iWork on the cloud. Jamie, what do you think?
I think there's always going to be the person out there who likes to go with the, I guess maybe the more, well, the free alternative, but not necessarily free, but the open source or the cutting edge, something like OpenOffice. And this article here, why I'm never going to install Office on my Mac again, is not so much that he hates Office, but that he really likes what he's seeing in OpenOffice. And so I think you've got these companies that are really, like we've said, concentrating on making their products available on as many platforms as possible. And then you have things like OpenOffice and NVDA and all of the free alternatives that are actually quite popular among many, many people.
And OpenOffice, as I mentioned earlier, is starting to look at doing some things to make it accessible. And that's very exciting because we get asked all the time, hey, what if I don't want to buy Microsoft Office? I don't have the money to shell out that much money for a boxed copy. And there's always the option of using 365, which is a subscription-based service, but you are still paying for it. And there are some free editors. It really depends on what you want to do. But to have OpenOffice, which is something that's pretty powerful and really can be a Microsoft Office replacement, to have something like that becoming accessible is very exciting indeed. I don't know how that's going to work itself out on the Mac. I think that the accessibility changes are only coming to Windows at this point, but I could be wrong about that. iWork, however, is accessible on the Mac, so you've got that. And the good news is that many of these lost features that people were very upset about not having anymore are making their way back to iWork. That's happening a little quicker than I expected, but I guess maybe there was so much clamoring, or Apple just really had to get iWork to market right then, and there were some other things that hadn't been fully baked that did become so shortly thereafter. And so, yeah, now I guess it's ready.
More users of iWork than, say, Final Cut? Because Final Cut's kind of sort of doing the same thing.
Yeah, it is.
A little testing of the waters with the user base to see what's important, what's not important, and what is just internet comment FUD. I can tell you something else that's increasing. The money that Samsung has to pay Apple. Boy, this is just like that rangefinder game on The Price is Right, you know, with the big thing, and they have to go, you know, stop, and it has to be between this range at the top and the bottom.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's what it feels like, that Apple is just letting that go until they go stop. And the jury goes, okay, this is how much you have to pay, Samsung. It just doesn't get any better for these guys. And, you know, like it or not, Samsung has done a couple of things that may or may not infringe in some ways in some people's minds. But two juries, kind of hard to fight that. And this just seems like it will go on forever and ever, and it probably will. They can exhaust appeals. But it seems like the more that they do, this is just going to keep going up, up, and up, to the point of then it becomes a relevant factor of how much damage did we actually do, and some of these have fallen into commonality, and then it becomes Fran and all this other stuff. So, you know, but it's also the price of doing business. So both companies know that, and this will become obscure in no time at all. I mean, there was the SEO patents that took forever. It was like 10 years for that trial to happen.
Before
that finally paid off. So what is interesting about this really is that it really has started the conversation about software patents in general. And of course, it inspired innovation. It made others kind of work around some of the issues. It made Samsung actually design their phones differently. It's very difficult to see a Samsung phone and an iPhone now being held up and say, yeah, that's one and that's the other. Even when it comes down now to the iPad, there's the famous part in the trial where they raised an iPad and they raised a Samsung tablet. And from far away, the judge asked the lawyer to tell the difference. And he was like, what?
I don't know.
There's some visual changes and there's some iconic modes. And so they stand out a little bit more. And maybe that would have happened over time. But chances are, unless you get sued, maybe not. So that happened. And it's kind of a non-story because we'll be talking about this in 2014 and 2015 and 2016. Until Apple says, stop.
Well, fortunately, the price of everything isn't going up, as in Mavericks, which is free. So it's been about 30 days, and you kind of wonder, how do people like it? What are they thinking about it? And this article that we have in our show notes, the guy actually wrote, and I quote, "It just works," unquote. I didn't think anybody was actually using that phrase anymore, but I don't think Apple is, but
no.
No, but, Apple competitors do to make fun of Apple.
Yes, yeah. Yes. This person likes Mavericks quite well, says it's the thing I think that keeps coming up is that it's a familiar interface. Of course, Windows 8 is much different than Windows 7, and the fact that Mavericks on the surface looks like Mountain Lion. I mean, so no
the thing that he liked most is the thing that people throw at Microsoft as being, okay, we're back to the stodgy thing. Here we go. Right. Here we go. This is a perfect example of the halo effect in action. I like it because it's the same. Okay.
Yeah, and Microsoft, you're always the same. Why can't you ever do anything better?
Okay, well, we're going to graft two operating systems in one into this. Well, wait, wait, that isn't what I was talking about. Why can't you just move the start button to the left or something?
But Mavericks really does feel familiar. The thing that I like most about Mavericks is that it is snappy. It is really, they've done some stuff with resource management that just makes it feel so much smoother. And I want to completely reinstall my Mac because it hasn't had a reinstall since I got the thing and was using Snow Leopard. And for Windows, I'm never like that. You know, every couple of years, I'll redo the system just because it's time to do that. Yeah.
Spring cleaning. Time to wipe out those cookies permanently.
Yes. And I've never done that for the Mac. And I hope to do that very soon. I think it's just time to do that and get rid of any weirdness that is left over from the Snow Leopard days, but I really like how snappy it is.
I'm ambivalent about Mavericks in general, but I agree with you that things seem to run a lot faster, or I can close windows a lot easier, or just putting my unit to sleep, I feel like it wakes up and recovers faster. I really do think for a system that I have with 4 gigs of RAM, that it really does feel like a new Mac. And so I do give them props in that direction.
Well, these are the kinds of conversations that are incredibly important to have. You should be able to be on a plane and carry on a conversation like this. Who wants to wait until you land to be able to talk about how awesome Mavericks is? No, you ought to be able to pick up the phone on that plane and say, "Hey, what you doing? Yeah, I'm sitting on the plane. We're flying."
I feel very much a Darth Vader. No.
Oh, yes. Me too. I hope they tax this privilege very heavily if they institute this.
Yeah. The FCC chairman, the incoming one, said, "You know, I don't think this is a good idea." And I totally agree because I sometimes like to sleep on planes rather than think about beating the crap out of the person next to me for their inane conversation.
And it always is. It's so inane. If you're sitting there in the airport waiting for the plane, or you're sitting on the plane and they haven't told you to turn stuff off yet, it's always just, I'm sitting here. I'm pretty tired and, you know, not a lot happened, but I just thought I'd give you a call. And, you know, that's pretty much what I'm doing.
Right. Did you feed him? Oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah. How about water? Did you water the dog? Okay. That's good too. Yeah. Been on that plane. I know what you're talking about. And that just, could it be worse though? What if everybody's talking to their devices like it's a Star Trek comm badge or something, and they're tapping their chests or, you know, yelling at "Okay, Google."
Google.
Yeah. And what's even worse is if 15 people have Androids, all their devices go, no, stop, no, not wait, him, no,
not
me,
you,
me,
not.
Me. What they call it, was it drive-by Googling? That, it happens to people on Google Glass where somebody goes, "Okay, Google," and then Google Glass goes, "Hi, how's it going? What'd you want? Hey, I'm here. What's going on?" So I see at some point what happens with emails. There was a very famous Mad TV skit years ago about people giving out their emails for a project. And as everyone went down the line, the names of the emails got worse and worse and worse. And so it was like Cabo Girl and then Juicy Booty 36 and all this. And so I could see if you allow that to be named, then OK Google could be actually nice, but imagine what could happen once we start using voice more with these devices and naming them Pookie or Poochie or whatever kind of sort of works. That could be very embarrassing. The same way that people do that with Siri now if they change their name. I've heard some scary Siri names.
Yeah, no doubt. I kind of like the idea. I mean, we have this article here that talks about voice becoming more prevalent if you're going to be using wearable technology. And it makes sense because it is a really seamless way to interact with something where you don't have to tap it or look at it or anything like that. But we've discussed what the problems are, you know, everybody talking to their stuff. What I wonder about is in a lot of sci-fi, you hear them talk about interacting with their devices through sub-vocalization. And I don't know exactly how that would work. I mean, how do you sub-vocalize exactly? But if we could figure that out, it seems like that would be an ideal way to do things where you're still using your voice or you're using the components of speech, but you're not saying stuff out loud.
Well, until they have the brain weaving reading technology, you know. But the Moto X is kind of the first steps towards that because you can talk to your Moto X and do a lot of contextual conversations. And of course, we know Microsoft is working on that with Cortana for the next version of Windows, possibly. So it is going in that direction. Even some Samsung TVs and some other TVs have voice control input, and even cable boxes, some of the Comcast boxes like the X1. Have voice control input. It is becoming something no longer of science fiction, and even things like the Kinect. You know, we read today that Microsoft's friends over at the company that created the Kinect actually have been sold to Apple for $350 million. They were the original designers. Microsoft actually has their own version of that now. They based the first Kinect off of that, but the second Kinect in the Xbox One is all their own technology, but Apple getting a motion sensing company and already has Siri and is working trying to get their own speech tech as well. It is the future. I will say that.
It's interesting to me to see my sighted friends in just very recent days start talking to their phone. I have a friend who has a Samsung device, and I mean, the other night he looked up something on the web and he just talked to it. And it's really not just the blind community anymore. I can see it. It's becoming the norm.
It's freakier when they can look at their phone and it sees that the eyes are focused on the screen. And then when they look away, it pauses a YouTube video or something like that.
Wow.
Wow.
That is kind of freaky. The new Xbox One has software zooming. So it will actually kind of sort of pan back and forth between two people in a room talking on Skype, or it'll frame them a certain way so that way it can capture them both. And of course, you know, the new Kinect has the ability to see individual finger movement for American Sign Language. Apple just was involved in a hearing aid that we retweeted from Triple Click Home. So if you go over to twitter.com/TripleClickHome, you'll see the link to Apple helping create a hearing aid device. And you throw that in with the Nest, where you've got all sorts of crazy thermostats and the smoke detectors, the new Nest Protect, which is the smoke detector they designed. We're heading to that smart home future that we've seen over and over and over again. And home automation becoming something that not somebody who has millions of dollars has. It's something that if you have the inkling, the time, and the money, you could actually do some of that today. And smart locks with, you know, low energy Bluetooth, you could actually set it up so that it knows that it's you and you're coming up, and it'll unlock your door for you, which is kind of nice if you have like a handful of groceries, or, you know, you're coming in with something in your arm and your guide in the other. So we're heading to that moment where your identity is your devices. And it may not be your phone. It may be something like a tie tack. It may be something like a button. It may be an earring, Ricky's pretty Bluetooth earrings that would actually be one of the factors of authentication.
Well, coming up after the break, I'm going to be brainwashed by music. Joe's going to be shown up by a little kid. And Ricky's going to join the cricket choir right here on Sarah Talk Podcast 179.
Hey, what's up? Thinking about you. XOXOXO. want to snuggle, dot, 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 JK. Hit me back. You getting these texts? Question mark. We should hang later. I miss you. Holla at ya, boy. Holla back. Holla back. Holla back. Are you at home? Where are you? What are you doing? OMG. You are making me mad. Are you with your ex? You better text me back. I'm waiting outside your house.
Relentless, aggressive texting is like sending an angry robot to deliver your message. When does the robot become dangerous? Let us know at thatsnotcool.com.
Thatsnotcool.com.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Sarah Talk Podcast 179. And it's time to take a look at that really happy, thankful mailbag.
Mailbag.
My reports.
The mailbag.
Email.
The mailbag.
Everything else.
The mailbag.
Ooh, yes, the mailbag smells like turkey and pumpkin pie somehow.
Big that's pumpkin pie lattes. There's no pumpkin in the pumpkin pie latte. I'm just saying, mailbag. I'm just saying.
We will not judge you for your caffeinating choices, mailbag. It's all good.
The mint chocolate one's so much better, mailbag. I'm just saying. Mint mocha. Go for it.
Yeah.
Mm. Ooh, mint mocha. I think I should run away and maybe get one of those and might come back to finish the rest of the show. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or be so keyed up you could do two more.
There is that. Yeah. We haven't recorded an EOL in a little while, so yeah. Maybe that'll be the plan, fueled by peppermint mocha. In the meantime, we do have emails and iReports and such things. And let's start off with one from Jim.
Hi, this is Jim from Portland, Oregon. I was listening to Sarah Talk Podcast 178, and I am not on Twitter currently, but it just infuriated me to hear about the reaction in our community about TapTapC becoming a paid service. They have absolutely the right to become a paid service, and that's what we should want them to do so that they can further develop their product and make it better. I am sick and tired of people in our community expecting everything to be free for some reason that doesn't make any sense and is completely selfish. It's damaging. If people in our community want the impression out there to be that helping us has to be a charity case, we are not going to get anything. If you want a product or service, you need to pay for it. We need to be thought of as consumers, and they need to get that through their heads or get some help.
Thank you, Jim. And honestly, it's really great to see just how passionate and fired up people get about certain issues. I like to see this kind of involvement where people really feel strongly about things. TapTapC has certainly been a hot button, and there have been others. But again, really liking the interaction with the community on this, and appreciate the iReport.
I love that the conversation's out there, that we can actually get it out into the open and people can actually say things that they've been saying in some cases privately or offline or behind closed doors at convention, but now it's like right out there. And I think that's awesome that we can have these conversations when it relates to something like this with development or something like that. You know, one of the things I had saw just recently is that Mozilla announced that they had like a little more than $300 million in profit. And then, of course, Google had pledged last year to give them like $300 million. So, where does that kind of – foundations run on the kindness of strangers. And that's why we have to donate to things like NVDA and others to keep those things afloat. Because if those other white knights out there walk away, then we don't have these things. And, you know, there are some amazing – people doing some amazing work out there, but if we don't support them one way or another, either through giving a donation or doing things with buying the app if available that way, or going out there and helping promote them so others can do that, then we won't have these things. And it doesn't matter how many of us use iPhones or any other devices. It doesn't matter. If there isn't a market for it, it can't exist.
Right on. Next up, we've got a comment from the blog from Terry Miller, who says this isn't related to any present discussion, but wondering, you know, 'tis the season, and Terry's perplexed by why there has to be loud music played in every store in a mall or a place like that. Each one of them has to have their own really loud music. And if you're going through a place like this, it's this cacophony of loud music that doesn't allow an independent blind person to navigate, or for that matter, to interact with the proprietor of the individual store. And then this also happens with lighting, where they'll have all these bright lights surrounding this object that they want to highlight and draw people in to come and buy said thing. And Terry says all this constitutes nonverbal transactions, and both of these issues are on the rise. What say you? Well, it's interesting that you ask, because yeah, we did talk about that. We talked about Instagram and how the selfie is on the rise, and all these other photographs are on the
rise.
One of
the words put into the Oxford Dictionary in 2013
exactly.
was the selfie.
No, we're not becoming narcissists at all. So many photographs and so many places to display these things where you may or may not have text. And just the other day, Joe and I were having a conversation, and I forget how it came up, but I was talking about this very thing where you go somewhere and there's this cacophony of sound, and how do you pick out one noise from that to get your bearings? And, oh, I'll head toward this sound because I know it's that store. Now it's not really like that. It used to be that you only had Hot Topic where you'd go buy it and it's going, you know, where they have the really loud dance music and it's all hip and stuff. Now it's everywhere.
Yeah. Well, we're back to what we had talked about a couple of weeks ago about the average person visually gets so many impressions a day versus today, where they're just bombarded by it. So it's trying to yell above. It's the signal to noise ratio. You're trying to yell above that. And all that does is mean everybody else gets to yell with you. And it becomes like that. And it's also somewhat subjective in some ways, because the way that malls were designed, if it's an older mall, you might have that. There's a lot of space in between that and the things in the middle, the little kiosks. Newer malls generally are like cattle chutes. They will force you down certain ways. There are only one or two ways to get out of there, like an IKEA store. And it's made for you to go a ways into it before you realize where you are. In mobility, that actually can work for you, because you know that you won't hit that many doors to lead you back outside. But the way that that works, believe it or not, I've taken courses on that in retail. Why you go on the right side of the grocery store in, and why you go through the produce aisle first. And there's a science behind all of that, believe it or not. And the same thing goes with this. There's an actual science for where placement is of signs, what it sounds like when you first walk into a store. And some of that is controlled in design, like the Apple store or the Microsoft store. Where it goes out is it's manned by people who are 18 years old and very, very not good with responsibility. So some of that goes out the door, and in goes the new Katy Perry record at plus 11.
Yes.
And so you will get that certain times of day. And if you can help it, if you have the ability to, not all of us do, but if you have the ability to go shopping Wednesday afternoon, that is the best time, because none of that stuff is going on. It's a business crowd. There are more people who are probably willing to talk to you because they're desperate to have customers, and that's probably when you can get your answers really met. Same thing for Best Buy. Those guys will probably hug you for walking in at around, you know, 11 a.m. on a Wednesday. Having worked retail, I can tell you that that's a good time, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays. It's not the greatest time to buy because sometimes that's when they're doing all the price markups. So you want to pay attention to that and then to see if there's a 30-day price guarantee because it might go on sale over the weekend and you could go back in and get your difference. So there is a reason for all of that. Some of it is architectural because there's a lot of reflective surfaces in a mall, a lot of openness, a lot of mirrors and glass and floors, big floors that just throw that audio all over the place to disorient you auditorially. But they were designed for the visual nature, and audio was the second thing. We talked about that, remember, a couple of months ago about Apple stores were louder than they needed to be.
Right.
Because of the glass and everything that was around it. So when you make these architectural design choices visually, it's not designed for us in a way auditorily.
Joe, I think you should take your Zoom H1 in hand this coming Friday, Black Friday, go to a mall and just walk around for us and just record your experiences.
The cacophony.
Yes.
I think I'd rather just watch South Park talk about Black Friday some more, which is awesome. If you're watching South Park, they actually do a Game of Thrones, Men of the Black Watch on Black Friday kind of joke over on the mall.
That it's is really so funny. Awesome.
Yeah.
I've worked Black Friday. I don't want to go back ever again. No.
Psychological over the damage. Past few years, I've done it a couple of times where it would be Thursday night at midnight. And the idea was, hey, going out with a couple of friends and we're going to go stroll the mall. And it's very surreal to be there at 3 a.m. and there's this huge crowd of people shopping as if it were daylight. But now you have people out with pepper spray and, you know, hey, Riot that gear. Is mine.
RoboCop goes by with Ed 209. Yeah, it's the worst part is, and by the way, try and be nice to your retail friends there because I, for several years, did not know what a holiday was because I had to work those doggone things. So,
oh, man,
you know, not hey, everybody, fun. I'm glad to eat turkey. In about 6 hours, I'm going to work. Whee! Yeah, it was great.
Wow. No, I don't think I will be out on Black Friday. I think I would much rather stay in and go hang out in the Samnet chat rooms and talk about Black Friday deals that might be going on. This sounds like a good idea.
I like to do
all my shopping online. Yeah.
So you could actually push away from the table and go and find some of the wonderful entertainment that we have in the entertainment area of Samnet and share that with your friends and talk about it. Or on Friday, you could go into one of the chat rooms and have a conversation with your friends about what you're seeing on Blind Bargains and other chat sites and other places on Twitter and Facebook with Black Friday deals. And on Saturday, you could call up your friend on Skype and tell him that his college football team lost the big game. That would be really cool.
Yeah.
On Sunday, you could actually go into one of our forums and write about what you ate and how it was great and what was going on and compare what you had done with all of your friends on a Sunday.
Yeah, there's actually, you could figure out what you're going to do with all those leftovers because we have recipe collections on Samnet,
And then pick it all up again on Cyber Monday and tweet it all out from the Socializer, our wonderful communications platform that allows you to be able to read Facebook, Twitter, and so much more.
That's right. And you might be sitting there thinking, but wait, I don't have a Samnet subscription. I can't do any of this stuff. Well, guess what? You can, because beginning on November 27th, we are opening up everything for everyone for a lovely 14 days of happiness and fun. So even if you have System Access or DocuScan Plus, and you haven't had a chance to try out any of the other services, they'll be totally available to you. And you can call us up to chat if you want, but you don't have to because that's going to be available without your having to get any outside assistance. Just go and grab the latest Saratech software package, saratech.com/downloads. And use it to your heart's content. Don't forget that you can actually use some of these services like viewing your previously scanned documents and checking out a lot of the great stuff on Samnet right from your iDevice.
Oh, yeah. Go to Samnet Connect right there in iBlink Radio. If you're already listening to us on iBlink Radio, you'll see an ability to connect your Samnet account to your iDevice and be able to get to some of those features that we've talked about right there. Take us on the go with you And also let us know what you think. We appreciate that. And you can let us know more about that where, Jamie?
Resources at saratalk.com is where you can send us an email. Go to www.saratalk.com and check out our show notes. And while you're there, go ahead and leave a blog comment. You can leave an iReport using either your iOS or Android device, or you can call the Blab line, 866-997-2522. It's time now for Roundabout. Well, you know, one of the things that is really special about the holiday time is music, and lots of it. I'm one of those oddball people who likes to play Christmas music. It's hard. You only play it once a year, so you have to relearn stuff, and I love it. So I had any excuse on November 1st, I got to play for an event in the city, a gift shop that had an open house, holiday open house, and I got to play about 4 hours of Christmas music over the weekend. So it was
wow.
A lot of fun. Mm-hmm.
Tubular Bells, my favorite. But how often
I love
do you
that.
Have
Mine
to
too.
Train the, those dogs to do Jingle Bells?
Yeah. The magic of sampling technology, man, and it's awesome.
That one's been around a long time, too.
Yeah, it has. It's amazing how music really affects us. We interpret music differently for lots of reasons. One is culturally, but also our brains just process music differently. We have an article here that talks about how music affects our brains, and it talks about a neutral face and how that depending on what kind of music you're listening to, you might ascribe different emotions to that face that you're looking at. So that sort of thing. Also, discussion we've had before, which is ambience, really can boost productivity, and that light music in the background can also do the same thing. Even like increasing visual skills, learning skills, certain kinds of music can aid with that as well. Not quite as much research on can certain music types predict personality types. And it's kind of funny because they talk about country music is, hard working and just kind of easygoing, and rock is something else. And reggae was not real hard working, but easygoing.
That was hilarious. Yeah.
It's a lot of juxtaposition there.
So, yeah.
Luckily, I like most types of music. So I guess I have good traits all across the board. Hey, I like this and I like that too. So now I can be hardworking and easygoing at the same time.
Sounds like a Myers-Briggs thing gone wrong. It just
pretty
sounds,
much.
It really does.
Yeah.
I took this personality test and it looks like a Pac-Man because there's this huge wedge missing out of the middle of it. And it's like, really cool stuff. But it's no ability to say the presidents or capitals or anything like that. And better yet, if you were able to do that in single-digit mode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. A little kid in this next article, a little YouTube clip here. This youngster is not from the United States originally, and so the mom is very heavily accented English, but very good English, and doing a great job of really teaching her child the presidents in order. He can say them all. Find different capitals of, well, all the U.S. capitals and also globally, just different names of countries. And I was just kind of all ashamed of myself as this little child was reciting all this stuff. But I'm not horrible at history and geography, but not anywhere near where this youngster was. So it's a fun YouTube clip. So give it a listen.
Can he do the Animaniacs song with all the capitals? Those are good.
I wouldn't put it past him.
have you heard that one? That one's really good. That one, I'll have to find that. Rob Paulson does that live. I can't believe that the voice of Yakko Warner can do countries of the world and the capitals like on the drop of a hat. It just blows my mind. Did I mention that I suck at math? I'm just getting it back out there. It's not my thing.
Yeah. 2 + 2 is?
Uh-huh. No, 22. Wait, I can do that one. Sorry. I can do the one because inchworm, 2 + 2 is 4. Never mind. Sorry. Sesame Street, you served me well.
Winter hasn't been here long and I'm already missing like the warmer weather when I can sit on the front porch and listen to crickets.
Crickets. Are awesome. Yeah, they are awesome. Except if one is trapped in your room. But otherwise, if they're outside and they're all with their friends and stuff, love them.
People with Solera, I've had my family members go, is there a cricket in the house? Because there's that cricket noise from Solera.
Or a frog.
Yeah. Wind chimes. When did we get wind chimes? Where did that come from?
So if you slowed them down, I wonder what they would sound like.
Somebody really else slow. Wondered that too, it turns out. And they did slow them down. So they have a track here where they're playing the normal cricket sounds and also playing a slowed down version of a cricket sound. Now, somebody suggested that they slowed the crickets down so that you would get the tone of the cricket, but somebody suggested the guy, you know, actually played on the keyboard to give them notes. But I'm not so sure that's true. I think this was perfectly natural and there was actually some harmony there. Very otherworldly sound. It's very cool.
It is. I'm kind of hoping someone else has done this because this is so cool. It almost makes me want some corroboration. It's like, yes, yeah. This really works. And yes, this is what this sounds like.
So. I think it's fake.
I heard dogs barking jingle bells. It's totally possible.
Yeah.
That's right.
Done in 1956 before there were samplers.
No, somebody should really do this in their spare time. Record a cricket and slow it way, way down. But it's just very cool in that there are so many sounds in nature that you'll have strange harmonies that you didn't expect or noises that you wouldn't hear necessarily in their natural state, but you take them out and manipulate them a little bit, and it's pretty awesome.
Someone took a bird call here several months ago. I remember seeing that and slowed it way down and created some really interesting, you know, a bird's trill is so fast that you can't distinguish
you
notes.
You can't distinguish notes, right.
As long as it's not auto-tuned, I'm totally down with this.
Oh, no, don't auto-tune birds. That's just wrong.
That's right. Well, I always know when it's time to end this podcast, or at least the news portion, and I believe we have come to that point.
Oh, yes.
Except, hey, don't go away, because Joe has the coolest interview ever, and I am anxious to hear it myself. With Justin from Solo DX. Learn all about that new movie reading app, plus whatever else those guys are up to over there. There's some good stuff going on there. I'd like to thank you all for joining us. Trust that you'll have a wonderful Thanksgiving. I would tell you not to eat too much, but I know better. So recover, and until next time, have a great week, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
Hi, everyone. It's Joe Steinkamp from Sarotalk, and I'm here with Justin Soul from Hollywood Access Services to talk about Solo DX and more. Hey, how is it going today over there in sunny Los Angeles, Justin?
Oh, it's pretty nice out here. How are you?
It's been a while since I've been to L.A., and I remember it fondly. And one day I'll have to tell you about my trek all the way up to the Chinese and walking along Hollywood Boulevard. It was everything Quentin Tarantino promised it would be.
Sounds like a whole podcast in itself.
Possibly, absolutely. But we're here today to talk about all the crazy things you guys have going on over there at Hollywood Access Services, including the app that you have recently released for iDevices and others. But let's start off by talking about yourself and what the organization does and what your mission statement is.
Right. Hollywood Access Services specializes in audio description of movies and TV shows for blind and low vision audiences. We also do closed captioning for the deaf and hard of hearing. I and my partners have been working in media accessibility for over 40 years now collectively. And we formed Hollywood Access Services last year. And we've been looking at not only improving the quality of audio description, but improving the accessibility of audio description.
So not just taking the Hollywood script and just rewriting stage direction, actually putting more context to it and giving some more insight to what a blind viewer might be looking towards in getting some of the information that's relayed on screen.
Correct. Yeah, it is sort of an art that takes time to learn how to audio describe because film, especially as such a visual media, it's not always so much a matter of just describing what you're seeing, but also describing how you're seeing and knowing what to concentrate on in terms of providing details, depending on what the context is, what type of movie it is. For instance, if I was describing Fast and the Furious, you would want to know a lot about the cars, maybe more so than you would if it was just a period drama, you know?
Right. And if it was Fast and Furious 6, I would like you to describe anything but the plot. So I think that's important.
Well.
Like at some point, the long runway. Oh, wait, that's a spoiler. But good Lord, there's like a runway that lasts for like miles and miles and miles at the end of that film. Anyway, yeah, I agree with you. Having worked in audio description for radio reading services and the like, it does really help to know if it's something that's integral to the plot or something that might come back later and not just he entered a room and he poured himself a cup of coffee. So you're right. There's a lot of information that has to be relayed in a very short time. And I think that's why people don't understand sometimes why the costs that are involved with digital video description is way different than, say, closed captioning.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Because it's essentially, it's almost like reverse screenwriting because you're taking a finished film and you're making a script out of it. You're not just parodying somebody else's words. You have to think how to write dynamically. I think it's sort of close to journalism too, because you oftentimes have really tight deadlines. You got to file your copy and you only have so many words. And so it's a matter of choosing the correct words.
Or game translation, where you only have a certain number of characters that you have to actually describe from another language, which could be representative of several English words, but is represented by one symbol in another language. So if you only have a certain amount of space before the next character talks, you've got to try and find out what is the best way to convey all that information. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it isn't just describing what that guy is doing on the screen at one time. And like you said, on the website for Hollywood Access Services is the staff and all the work that you guys have done before, including such stints with individuals working with WGBH and others. So there's a long lineage that you have there on the website. So it's not something that comes easy, like you said, and that makes it a little better for what you're having to do. And how's it been going so far? Have you been well received in the community? Have you been able to make some inroads and get some ideas? I think you recently had a Breaking Bad that you all had released through iTunes, correct?
Correct. Yeah, it's taken some time as a new company to get ourselves established. In terms of the Breaking Bad that you're speaking of, that was part of something we developed called Solo DX, which, you know, I could talk a little about that. We saw a lot of the complications existing in accessing audio description. For instance, audio description is on the DVDs more and more, but it's really not easy to access because you have to go into these complicated visual menus to be able to pull up the audio description track. On television, it's not that easy to access if you have, say, a satellite provider, and you're going to have to go into the audio features again to be able to turn it on, or even in some cases have to contact your cable provider to get it working. On top of that, there's this huge back catalog of classic titles that have never been described and television shows that are in the zeitgeist right now, like Breaking Bad, that were never described. So we came up with a way sort of modeled after something called Riff Tracks, which is from the Mystery Science Theater 3000 people after that program ended. If, in case anybody's not familiar, that was a show where people took old movies and sort of made fun of the movie as it was playing. After that show was canceled, they wanted to continue doing their work on the internet, but they could no longer afford to license the movies to show. So they just came up with the idea to release just the audio track that you could sync to the movie and you would still get the full experience. So we thought that was a pretty good model. So we developed Solo DX, where you can purchase a track on iTunes or Amazon. We try to keep them pretty cheap, so an individual film is between 99 cents and $1.99. Or you can buy, say, a full season of a show as an album. And each track will contain, at the beginning, an audio cue for you to listen for in the program. And as you hear that audio cue, you start playing the file and it should sync up. And it's pretty easy to, if you're slightly early or slightly late, it's pretty easy to get them back in sync by, you know, quickly pausing and unpausing either the film or the audio description, whichever is ahead of the other. So yeah, Breaking Bad was one of the programs we described for that. We decided what to describe primarily based on user requests, which I think was something else unique. Usually it was the studios deciding what would be described and what wouldn't. And in this case, because we didn't have to worry about getting the studios on board, we could just go with what individuals wanted for audio description. So popular user requests were the programs and the films that we decided to describe.
Yeah, that first season is very visual, especially with, again, a little bit of spoilers, things involving a swimming pool and airplanes. So
that
takes a little bit to get used to doing that. And I'm also familiar with Riff Tracks and, of course, Cinematic Titanic, which is another offshoot where it's some of that. And it is a great way to be able to do some of that and be more modern, like you said, than having to wait or maybe just, you know, hey, you can do Jack and the Beanstalk, but you can't necessarily do John Carter or whatever the movie du jour is at the time that may be moving forward. Yeah. So that's awesome. And like you said, those are easily available, but you guys even came up with something else that makes that more fortuitous to doing that in the cinema.
Correct. Yeah, because we saw the potential for using Solo DX in the cinema, but obviously the downside in the theatrical setting is if you start your file wrong in the cinema, you obviously can't pause the movie. So it's not quite as easy to sync it up. So we knew we needed some way that the file could be synced automatically for you. So we looked at, and I have to credit Josh Mealy, Dr. Josh Mealy and his team up at the Smith-Kettlewell Video Description Research and Development Center up in San Francisco. They helped guide us in terms of coming up with a way that we could use acoustic fingerprinting technology, which is the technology used by apps like Shazam, where if you hear a song and you can hold up your smartphone and it will hear the song and tell you, you know, what the song is. It can even give you the lyrics. So we saw that technology was in a pretty good place, and that was the exact type of thing we needed for an application that could be used for audio description. So we looked at developing our own app. It was obviously, this technology is not cheap. So, you know, we thought it was going to be maybe a few years off before we could actually have it ready to go. But as we were looking into developing this, we thought maybe we could license acoustic fingerprinting technology from an app that already was using it. And in Europe, there were a few apps we found that were using acoustic fingerprinting for captions and subtitles in the theatrical setting. So we looked at a few of them, and one we found seemed to stand out above the rest. It was called Movie Reading. It was out of Italy, actually. And they primarily were for foreign language subtitles. So if you were a German-speaking person who was, you know, living in Italy for 6 months and wanted to go to the movies but wouldn't understand it, you could download the German track, say, on your smart device, and you would get the translation. So we made contact with them, and they, as it turned out, they were looking for a way to both get into audio description and somehow to get into the U.S. market, which is something we could offer them. So we ended up partnering with the app and developing with them a version for the U.S., which, as we're speaking, should be released in a matter of days.
Wow, that is fantastic. And without having to do something like, when I first was reading this, I thought of Shazam and some other technologies, but I also thought, well, maybe it's kind of what's used for DMCA takedowns, and that, you know, you're looking for the exact file, or, you know, something that would be what's used on YouTube sometimes to be able to enact DMCA. And for our listeners who don't know what that acronym stands for, that's the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. And that is used with DRM, or the ability to take down files that may be pirated and promoted on YouTube. So that's why I'm excited about what you're talking about, because we on our show, Serotalk, talk a lot about how mainstream technology is being used in ways that we hadn't imagined that also benefit us, either by byproduct or benefit the blind community through actions like, let's say, built-in speech on voiceover for iDevices. So we can walk in and grab devices like that or the Nexus 7 from Best Buy and come out with things that talk. And so to hear that something that was used in one commercial vein had benefits for us in another just really speaks to inclusiveness, and it's exciting to hear.
Right.
You were promoting a film that is coming out around the Thanksgiving time that is working well with this particular technology. Can you talk a little bit about the film and the audio description process and the app a little more in regards to what's coming out at Thanksgiving?
Yes, the film is called Philomena. It's being distributed by the Weinstein Company, and that will be the first official film released on this app for theatrical use. And it opens in New York and L.A. on the 22nd, and then it opens wider nationwide on the 27th. And it's a pretty nice little drama about, it's an interesting true story about a woman from Ireland who had a child out of wedlock when she was young, and a Catholic convent took her in and ended up giving away her child. And so it's her search, you know, many decades later to try to find the child who's, you know, long since been taken to the U.S. So that will be the first film on the app, hopefully the first of many. So how it'll work is when you download the app, and it's a free app, and all the files will be free, you download the app, and then from the app there is a market tab which will list any available titles, and then you choose the title you want, and you download that to your device. And that's something different that we use in our device versus something like Shazam, is not having to connect to a server and actively search a database. For one reason, because we don't know necessarily if all movie theaters are going to have great, you know, signal from within the movie theater. There's a lot of movie theaters that are, right, you know, underground and whatnot. So we wanted to eliminate the variable of connectivity. So you would download it ahead of time to your device, and it only takes a matter of minutes to download it. And when you're in the theater, you would select that title from your library, and when the movie starts, you would open it up, press OK, and it will listen for the film. You know, usually the theater speakers are loud enough that it'll pick it up pretty well. It takes maybe 10 seconds to get the sync. And then if it's ever off, you can always resync it as well. There's an option to press sync during the film playing, and it will it'll resync itself. So yeah, it found it to be pretty user-friendly. It's pretty, it works well with voiceover. We've tested it. It's, you know, there's not a lot of graphics or anything, so it should be pretty easy to use, and we're excited to see what feedback we get from individuals who try it.
Now, does this remain, you'd mentioned a library, do these files terminate, or do they have a certain time at which they would then leave? Let's say you saw it in the theater, mm-hmm, and then you're waiting for the home video release. Would it be possible to then use it later in home video to have the same experience, or is it really timed for theatrical release and then the files would disappear after a certain period of time?
At this time, the file remain in your library. That may change down the road. Yes, it could definitely be used for home entertainment as well. That's another advantage we see of the app, is that you could use really for any venue, you know, even if it's going to be broadcast on TV, you could use the app. The only difference with home entertainment is that film in the theater runs at a slightly different speed versus, you know, right, watching a DVD or online. So ideally, we'll hopefully come out with an updated home video version of it. The file itself from the market will only be there as long as the film is in theatrical release. And then when it comes out on DVD, then, you know, either we'll re-release that file or ideally we'll have a formatted file specifically for the DVD release. But like I said, even the existing file you can still use for home entertainment. You may have to resync every 10, 20 minutes because it might get slightly, right, off. But other than that, yeah, it should still be a usable file.
Still, the ability to have that versus, and as we described offline, Justin and I were speaking about my experience last year with Skyfall at a Regal cinema, and having to go into the cinema, be asked for my driver's license, which is great when holding a cane, and also then to be asked to fill out some paperwork with pen and paper, followed by being handed a device with headphones that were kind of shorted, so I was glad I had earbuds in my pocket. You know, being able to control that experience and have it from your own device is far preferable than relying on a number of things that could possibly go wrong, especially if you're arriving to the theater late. So
that is
awesome.
Yeah, it's another advantage. Yeah, if you arrive a few minutes late, you can still get it to sync up with your app. And and that was a lot of feedback we were getting from blind moviegoers was a lot of bad experiences with the existing technology. And not to knock it, because there certainly are a lot of people around the country who have the local theater that they trust, and, you know, the equipment has generally worked well for them. We know one gentleman down in San Diego who knows even better than the theater staff which screens work better with the audio description than others. And, you know, he'll always ask, you know, which screen is this movie playing in before he goes.
Well, I'm just as guilty of that. In Houston, at some point, I knew all the THX theaters and would only go to certain ones at certain times. So I can say honestly that I was just as guilty of that. There's actually a famous Big Bang episode where they're standing in front of a map and they're talking about how far away their favorite restaurants were and what concessions were available. That's how they broke it down to, oh, that's playing there. We're not going to go there.
Yeah. Now this way you can go to any theater.
That's exactly what I was going to say was mm-hmm. this gives you the ability to go to a theater that is maybe doing it or not, or even a drive-in if you have a really good sound system in your car, as I'm apt to do from time to time and go to the drive-in. So like you said, just having that technology there means you're not having to rely on any sync track to what's already being going on, or if they're even broadcasting it, or if they fall out of sync, if it's not completely on the platters correctly. So a lot of opportunity. So if someone wants to learn more about what you are doing and what releases are coming up, or if they want to be able to further along the cause by purchasing some of these tracks or donating to your organization, where can people go to learn more about the app and what you're doing?
Our website is solo-dx.com. And that will list all the tracks that we have available, you know, the traditional MP3 version way on iTunes and Amazon. And it will also contain information about the app. That's not up there yet, but it will be within the next few days. The app itself, it's called Movie Reading, one word, and it should be available on the App Store by the 22nd, I believe, when Filmino opens. There is a version on there now that's not the final version that will be released in a couple of days. So if you download a version and you're finding a bunch of Italian titles in the market, then you know you'll need to download the new version, the American version.
Right. Not start looking for Cinema Paradiso, right, or anything like
right,
that.
Right,
okay,
right.
I'm good. Okay. Yeah.
We just got word today that Apple, the App Store, approved the U.S. version for release, so it should be available shortly.
Rats, I was going to get out all my Criterion titles. Okay, but that's okay. I'm sorry. That's a little bit of a Laserdisc joke. I'm sorry. So great. So they can get it from there. Is there any chances of this moving on to other platforms like, say, Windows Phone or Android?
Yes. Android, we definitely plan on having it on Android. We put our emphasis on iOS devices. Oh, and it's currently compatible with iOS 6 or higher. But we put our emphasis on iOS devices because with VoiceOver, they seem to be a lot more, you know, user-friendly for blind individuals than the Android accessibility features, at least in terms of the feedback we've gotten. But yes, there will be an Android version available hopefully within the next few months.
Okay. Well, I help host an Android show here on Sarah Talk Podcast Network, so I would be in deep trouble with my Android cohorts if I didn't at least ask the question.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah. we'd get some feedback. There are a couple of thousand people who listen to that show who would be immediately right. Why didn't you ask about, you know? Well, that's fantastic. And also social media. I follow you guys on Twitter. Where else can people follow you?
Yes, we have a Twitter. It's at solo-dx. And we have a Facebook page, solo-dx. You can follow us either of those places. Yeah, Twitter, we're probably the most active on Twitter in terms of disseminating, you know, information about upcoming releases and whatnot. You can always email us at info@solo-dx.com.
Justin, thank you guys for all your hard work on this particular app. It's going to be really liberating for someone who goes to the cinema as often as I do. And I appreciate your time here today. And everybody, definitely go check out this app and all the other work that's available on Amazon and iTunes from the Hollywood Access Services Group and Solo DX. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it was my pleasure.
You've been listening to Sarah Talk. Visit us at www.saratalk.com. Send us an email at resources@saratalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.